But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah.
Simply, and this is she, and I want to thank you for joining us today and, yes, sing hallelujah for being able to finally bring this episode forward. Francois Netter, I want to thank you for your patience. Today we're going to dive into a conversation with Francois, and we're going to discuss her book, Movement for the Mind, and the power and the beauty of dance and how it can become a catalyst to heal, transform, and move forward. Without further ado, let's dive in with Francois.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Francois, I'd like to thank you for being here today with us. I'm really excited to connect with you about your work, and I would like to dive in. First, we'll start with your book, Movement for the Mind, Dance That Awakens Healing, Inspiration, and Wisdom, and I felt this is what a beautiful theme to walk through, healing, inspiration, and wisdom today with you. So if you could first share with the listeners what inspired you to one, bring this work forward right now. It's very timely for here on planet Earth. And what you feel the thread is between the healing, the inspiration, wisdom to kind of create that harmony between those three different chords.
Well, thank you for having me, Suzanne. This is great. The book itself was actually a project that has been 15-year process, and it was supposed to be published in 98 originally, and I had a publisher in the Bay Area actually approach me, pitch me for the project because they had actually bootlegged the tape at Stanford University and heard about my work. So I wrote the project and wrote the book and got it in under deadline, and then three key people in the publishing company actually left the company and it was thrown out. So through a long process, I ended up leaving the Bay Area and coming to Colorado. And the project was almost published three more times, and then I just taught the principles of it and let it go. And then recently, as you asked me, why now? In the last few years, I believe that we have reached a level of consciousness that now needs to be really embodied. And in my work with educators and in my work in teaching people, what I've noticed is that we have gone so far to the left side of the brain where we engage everything through our logic, everything through technology, that I think it's really important to come back into a balanced way and integrate right and left brain and go back to this resource that we have, this incredible resource, which is our body, which is the wisdom in our body, and to engage it in a creative way, which really is not available in the world today. We don't have that many modalities that utilize a creative modality with the wisdom of the body. So I felt that it was just timely, that it was almost like, okay, I don't care what it takes, this has to go out now. I had published the ebook, the book as an ebook about a year ago, and then just really felt that it needed to be in a paperback copy as well. So it's been re-edited and a beautiful foreword was added to it, and so I really feel that it is timely now. And in terms of healing, inspiration, and wisdom, the key for me in this work is integration. And we live in such a segmented society where everything is separate. Our emotions, we go to see a shrink for healing our emotions, or we do talk therapy, or we go to groups and support groups. We take care of our bodies by going to a gym or by doing exercise. We take care of our minds by taking courses, by reading books. We take care of our spirituality by going to churches or temples, but there are so few modalities that allow us to experience ourselves as this integrated wholeness, where we're not just bodies or minds or spirits or feelings, but we are one whole being where we can engage all those modalities in one place. And so that's what I believe is the most unique part of this work and how it integrates healing, inspiration, and wisdom.
Mm, well said. If you can share a little bit about, for you, what you've noticed since you've carried this with you for some time, the results of incorporating movement and reconnection to the body, but in a mindful way, one that's maybe you arrive on the scene with one connection to yourself, and then when you have the experience of working with the body and really connecting to it, how you've noticed that transformation to occur with some of your students and how you've realized how it's impacted their entire life.
I've worked in every kind of environment you can imagine. My background is in yoga, in dance, and in dance therapy, and I've also been an art therapist, meditation teacher. So I come from a background of both the arts as well as the spiritual disciplines. And what I've noticed in working with every kind of people, from working with people in jails and halfway houses and prisons and educators and their students and corporate executives and the MBA program at Stanford University, among many other facilities, organizations, and individuals, is that when we combine movement, which is based in an artistic modality, which is based in the arts, and yet we allow anyone to be able to access that with intention. And that intention could be, if I'm working with corporate executives or in the MBA program, it would be a goal. Let's say it would be brainstorming or it would be problem solving. What happens is that because movement allows us to access the right side of the brain, the nonverbal intelligence, ideas, inspiration comes spontaneously because it moves beyond the logical mind. It's the same way that people will experience a problem and they're thinking and thinking and thinking and nothing's happening. And finally they go out for a run. Out of nowhere, the inspiration for solving the problem comes. And it's the same thing that has happened in these courses. So when I've worked with corporate executives, all of a sudden these ideas come to them. Besides the fact that they get all the benefits that dance, movement, and exercise brings, which is a sense of relaxation, a sense of energy, greater blood flow. They feel fabulous. The headaches go away. The pain goes away in the body because they find themselves immersed in the moment. And then with that intention, all of a sudden they have access to what they have put out for. So whether it's a goal of, as I said, problem solving or whatever else the goal is, the theme is. In the book, I have a couple of introductory chapters and then a chapter which introduces the actual basic movement vocabulary and how to do it. And then I have four application chapters. And those application chapters include dance as stress management, dance as creativity, dance as physical healing, and dance as psychological healing. I will give you one other example. I had a woman once who came to me. She was suffering from fibromyalgia for years and years and years, and she was actually the wife of a physician and had had the best medical care that she could find, and nothing absolutely nothing alleviated her pain. She was in pain 24/7, and she hated the meds that, you know, were prescribed because they always put her, you know, there were so many side effects. So she had read about my book, not my book, but she had read about my work in an article in the newspaper in the Bay Area. And she called me and asked, you know, she said, I love to dance. Can I come over? I would love to try this. I'm sure it's not going to work, but, you know, I read about it, and can I come? So I made an appointment, and I always, in any session, I always find out what are people's intention, what are their goals, what, you know, so we talked a little bit. And then I realized that this woman had been in nothing but pain. So what we did is, for about 45 minutes, I guided the session with words of joy and laughter and play, and I just wanted to invoke for her a different experience. So we got through the session, you know, and then we talked about it, and she said, oh, I feel fabulous. I'll call you next week. I feel great. I have no pain in my body right now. And I remember that she called me the following week. Unfortunately, I never followed up with her after that, but she called me and she said, Françoise, I've been pain-free since I've seen you, and please keep me on your mailing list. I will come to any session, any workshop, seminars that you have, but I won't be needing any follow-up because I feel so good. And unfortunately, I don't know what happened to her, but it was that, you know, I really believe that when we integrate and when we allow space and room for a different experience, and especially for the healing that is inherent within us, and we're able to access that, anything is possible.
Definitely, anything is possible. And if you can share a little bit about, in your book, you talked a little bit about trauma and the possibility of moving that energy through movement, and can share with the listener what you've seen, if you have, the results. Yeah.
Well, in that chapter, I talk about a doctor of psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Stockdale, and he had done much research on post-traumatic stress disorder. And for his work, he was working basically with Vietnam War veterans. But it's true about anything, any kind of PTSD, any kind of trauma. And what he found, he studied two brainwaves. And he studied beta brainwaves and alpha brainwaves. And what he found was that most traditional therapy, both talk therapy as well as medication, activated beta brainwaves, which are, again, working with, for lack of time, just being simplistic, working with the left brain, the logical part of the brain. And what he found with trauma is that you have to access the alpha brain waves, which are slower, which deal more with the right brain, the amygdala, the frontal lobe. And most of alpha brain waves are accessed through nonverbal activity. So what I found with movement is that not only is it nonverbal, but I use different techniques that I bring into awareness, including learning how to have appropriate boundaries, learning how to make your body safe, and incorporating that with movement allows individuals to access their experience of the trauma, but from a detached place, to experience those feelings and then to release them. And we do all of this in a safe way, because for anyone, and I really don't know anyone who on the planet who has not experienced some trauma, it comes with the body, who doesn't have this fear, wants to never see that again. And it's just like all of us who, you know, have a house and we decide, oh, I just don't want to clean it. I'll just bury the dirt. I'll just keep shoving it under the rug. And then finally you have this huge lump of dirt because you haven't vacuumed it and gotten rid of it. And it's very similar for each one of us, that we have to find a, or it is beneficial to find a safe modality that allows us to feel the feelings and then let them go. So it's not about indulging them. It's about feeling them, releasing them, and then becoming the person and truly allowing the person we are today to shine forward. And I have worked extensively with sexual assault survivors, incest survivors, and have had the privilege of working with people who have had multiple personalities, and it's just, it is a privilege, because each one of us, you know, does the best we can with the experiences that we've gone through. And my heroes have always been people like Alice Summers, who is the oldest living Holocaust survivor at 108 and is just an extraordinary being who was able to transform the atrocities that she was, you know, had to live through and become this exquisite being. And shown her, you know, who was able to shine her light. So I think in some way it really, each one of us is being asked to do that, to move through the darkness and to, you know, find the light, to turn on the light. And I believe this process helps people do that.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And if you can share a little bit about boundaries, being that in Indigenous cultures, dance is used in ceremonial traditions, and is done very mindfully, very carefully, because it has an intention, it has a ceremony, and it has a purpose, and never will they even allow certain substances to be around, because they understand the reverence they need to hold for the unseen. And then you'll go into other epochs of our society where there's a lot of substances, a lot of music, a lot of movement, and it's actually, I don't know, catalyzing more and more of a certain theme. So if you can share a little bit about boundaries and mm-hmm. how we can respect those within ourselves and within each other.
Yes. Well, what I have found, and especially I was an incest survivor myself, and it took me, took me so many years to find the kind of recovery that I finally was able to actualize. Because there was so little known about PTSD, there was so little known about sexual, physical, emotional abuse until in the last 20 years. And one of the most important things I noticed about myself, as well as all the survivors that I've worked with at this point, thousands, is that we, and this is true for people who have even not gone through what we call trauma or abuse, none of us are really taught how to have appropriate boundaries. We can be around someone who, you know, we just met, and all of a sudden, you know, you feel like they just jumped inside your body. They have their hands all over you, and, you know, they want to touch you, and you're kind of going, whoa, wait a minute, you know, this is a little invasive. And then you meet other people that you might even have relationships, very close, you know, intimate relationships, and you feel like there is this steel wall between you and them, and you can never, you just never feel like there's, you know, there's any sense of closeness because of this imaginary steel wall, but you can still feel it. So they have armors up. So I teach a process that first uses your physical skin to delineate our physical boundaries. And, you know, there's that, for those of us, you know, who understand that on the one level we have these individual bodies and we're separate, you know, we're separate from the room we live in, we're separate from each other, and yet conversely we're also all part of the same energetic field. So it uses our skin as this ability to delineate, you know, my voice from their bodies, our apparent separateness. But it's very important while we're living in this skin. So the first thing is to delineate our physical boundaries. And then I have individuals begin to experience mentally the space inside of their skin. And this space is their inner boundaries. And it's where they can really create privacy, or total connectedness. And every person then begins to feel both the inner and the outer boundaries. And the inner boundaries are where they can house their memories, their hopes, their dreams, their visions. And they can truly feel this space not being invaded again. It cannot be invaded by anyone. So it gives people that sense of control and power back over their own bodies, over their own minds, over their own emotions, over their spirit. So it becomes very important, I have found it to be very significant as well with children, because they need to learn their self-space. And today especially, where we're like plugged in from about the age of 3 on to either, you know, computer games or to iPods or to computers themselves, it becomes so important to feel that sense of connectedness as well as individuality.
Definitely. Moving back to interdependence versus codependence.
Yes.
As you're speaking, if we can dive a little bit deeper, two things. The first thing that came up as a topic for you to share on is you mentioned earlier, you know, left brain, right brain, coming back to center. I couldn't agree with you more. And the only thing I see right now, and I think you're the perfect person to share this wisdom, is I get a little concerned that the pendulum's so far one way, everyone's trying to swing it the other way, meaning that really we're not even using our left hemisphere in the correct manner anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not using our right hemisphere in the correct manner anyways. And there's a possibility, if we're not careful, that the feminine energy, the right hemisphere, can be, you know, manipulated in the wrong direction if we're not careful with our collective society. So if you can speak a little bit to that, you know, the left and the right are both equally important. And from your experience, since you've worked in all different types of realms of therapies, how you can see that maybe we can come to center, that center point where we can merge our left and our right hemisphere so they can do a beautiful dance together.
Mm, yeah, such a great way to say it. Well, I think for me, again, my whole life, and I don't know how I've reached this, but it seems like even as a little girl I knew about this, I have always been involved with moderation and balance. When I teach a class, I always write 4 elements that I believe are missing not only from our educational venues, but from the 21st century society itself. And the first key element is integration. The second is balance. The third is self-expression. And the fourth is connectedness. And I believe if we just address those 4 things, everything, including that integration of right and left brain, will occur. And I know that, you know, the one thing I want to honor is that there's so many different paths to the same place. So we each have to just find that unique modality or modalities, many, that can get us there. And when you first asked me, why do you feel that this work is so relevant now and that it was finally time to bring it out? And that, again, is because I believe if we just use different techniques that allow us to experience integration, our integrative ability to experience life rather than to segment everything and feel so separate, then we'll be integrating right and left brain. And I think, you know, for any of us who've studied a little bit about the brain, I mean that. I mean, I've only studied a little bit. I find it fascinating. I'm always amazed when studies show that even geniuses are only using 12% of that gray matter, and the rest of us, you know, normal folk are using 7 to 9%. So, you know, I always wonder, what are we doing? And, you know, we've studied great masters. I know that certain meditation masters, the Dalai Lama, in the 70s, even the film, which is, I love, I don't know if you saw this film, Men Who Stare at Goats, the
yes.
military were studying, you know, the Russians, Yuri Geller, and certain people who were able to create, you know, ESP, and then Yuri Geller was bending spoons. So they were studying, well, what about, you know, what about alternative ways of using the mind and psychic phenomena? And even with these studies, what we do know is we don't know. And so I think the key is moderation, Suzanne, and integration rather than going to either extremes. And we are a very extreme society, especially in the West.
Yes.
that to me is the key, and I guess in that way, I mean, you know, whatever we teach, we're always having to learn, but I am, we'll see how good I am about that, but you know, I think for me that I work to, or I extend myself, I expand in the area of balance and moderation, and you know, I've always felt that way, and I've chosen paths that honor that for me, that are not extreme. Mm. And I think that everyone just needs to find that. And most people, when you talk to them, we're always looking for that sort of balance. And even when we dance in extremes, we're always, you know, we're moving towards the core. We're moving towards our center.
Right.
So it just looks different, I think, for different people.
Definitely. Well said.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You completely answered it, because I think the moderation is a huge key, because we can see this with eating trends in society. We can see this with,
yes.
You know, fads, with pop culture. People just are so quick to go to that extreme and throw themselves at it. And then what you got at earlier, and we can maybe dive in here, was that wall that can be between, like, you and your partner that you don't understand. You can't access them, but there's a wall there. And if you want to dive in there about the potential within your work and within exploring movement, the modality of movement, to get past that wall, because a lot of times it's just fear. And
yeah.
then if you can share with the listeners a little bit about the intimacy that's afforded to us, because when we go to these extremes, we're never getting into a deeper, richer relationship, whether it's friendship or otherwise, because we're moving so quickly, right?
Oh, it's so true. And we're not honoring our own vulnerability. And I think for all of us wounded in unique ways, you know, whether I've heard stories, you know, we always think our story is the deepest, ugliest, but I've heard stories from people, and my mouth just drops. And everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. I'm always amazed at what people will be able to be resilient from. But I think that what allows intimacy is the ability to do two things. Number one, to really dive deeply within our own vulnerability. And number two, to access, and we always forget this, you know, that we are really here for joy. We are here to move into this. The ancient yogis, the shamans, all of them. I've never sat at the feet or been or in the presence of a great master who was not joyous and childlike, not childish, but this extraordinary, you know, sense of humor and play. And we forget that. And, you know, the more that we move fast and try to escape both our vulnerability and what we think of as pain, we also move further away from our joy and, you know, that playfulness. So I think that is what is very, very important, is to remember that. And that allows us then, when we're first vulnerable with ourselves, when we can dive deeply into our shadows, into our fears, and it's just like a teacher I know used to say, that how do we get rid of darkness? We don't go scrubbing and resisting the darkness. We turn on the light. And it's the same way with being able to be intimate. We first dive within ourselves. And, you know, when the fears come up, we sit with it, and then all of a sudden we are able to turn on the light of joy, the light of deep awareness. And then our vulnerability is something beautiful, and then we also are able to embrace the vulnerabilities of others, and that's where the intimacy can really, really happen.
Beautiful. And as you were talking, all of a sudden we're going to go, hi, we're going to go to a little theological discussion, if you don't mind, because I remember reading, you made a reference to something that the body and the mind disconnect when religion came in and basically put shame around movement and connection to the body. And if we look at most of our lore that most of us are attributing any type of knowledge that we think we have on the planet right now, it's pretty intense. I don't care if you go from Buddhist to Hindu to Muslim to Christianity to Judaism, Islam, it's intense. Like, there's some pretty intense shame-filled guilt stuff in there. and I'm not trying to put any of that down, preface that, but if you can talk about where that disconnect could happen, because what happens in society is typically over civilization to civilization, there's a disconnect that actually interrupts the pattern, the natural organizing system of nature to keep moving. And quite potentially, this is the reconnect right now, is to put together the movement back so we can be that holistic system. If you can just share from your perspective and sharing that, and then how the listeners might be able to re-embrace their spirituality, their belief system. I'm not trying to cut down anyone's religion. I'm just saying that, you know, when we read these things that we love and we realize, whoa, that's pretty intense, how do I want to re-relate to that? How do I want to have a more healthy relationship with something that's so intimate to me?
Well, it's interesting because also as being an incest survivor, it's fascinating because our bodies are the vehicle that we take birth in. And when there is any kind of sexual abuse, it becomes so confusing because the very thing that brings us the most pleasure in the body, our sexuality, is all of a sudden a double entendre. It is wrong, it's painful, but yet it's pleasurable, but it's wrong. So you get completely confused. And there's all these patterns that get invoked because of this, you know, thing that shouldn't have this dualistic feeling to it. Having said that, I believe that's what we've done in the West. And in my research, it was very much poignantly placed during the time of the Greeks, when we began to elevate the intellectual mind and to separate the body. Yes, there were the Greek gods, and there were, you know, there was the Adonises, and there was a great deal put to the beauty of the body, but the mind, the intellect, reigned supreme. And we've done that same dualistic shame confusion with all of the dogmatic religions. When we get into the mystical realm, whether it's Judaism or it's Hinduism or it's Tantra in Tibetan Buddhism or even in the Gnostic Christian text, it is fascinating because in the book I quote in the Gnostic doctrines that Jesus said dance was one of the most elevated forms. And there is so many different references to that in the ancient mystic text. however, of all religions. However, I think that it is another way of creating separation. See, we live in the most interesting, I believe, universe. Being in the body, I can't really speak about other universes at this point. I can do it only from an intellectual point of view. But it seems ironic that on the one hand, we appear to be very separate from each other. When I leave the body, when I die, my body will no longer, will be dead, and I will leave just with myself. I won't leave, no matter how intimate, if I'm married to someone, I'm not going to leave with them. I have to leave. I come into this body separately, and I will leave. Having said that, as clear as there's this dualism, for anybody that's ever experienced a sense of oneness, and I speak to this in all my classes, have you ever looked at a sunset? Have you ever been, whether you're in a sexual relationship or whatever, or you've had a piece of food that just melts in your mouth, and at that moment, whether you're looking at the sunset, whether you're having an orgasm, whether you're just holding someone's hand and you look into their eyes, you have this moment where you are just one with everything. So we live in this ironic place where there is the dualism, and yet we are aware of this oneness that connects all of us to everything. And I believe that's kind of the irony with religion, where if you look deep enough, you will find where the body is not looked at separately from the mind. And there's one other thing that just came to me. I think the reason that religions became so dogmatic and we separated the mind and the body and we made the mind so much more, the hierarchy of the intellectual mind, is because it's in the body that we can experience that oneness, that bliss, that joy. And there's some fear, because when we're in that place of oneness, there is no hierarchy. There's no, I have control over you. And in this Western culture, we have made a habit of that hierarchical thinking, which gives birth to separation. I'm different than you. I have to have power and control over you. And so, one of the things we've done to indigenous societies is like you mentioned at the very beginning of the program, they have an ability to do this integrative thing. They have the honoring of the body, the honoring of the intention of the mind, and the knowledge that it's a very powerful place.
And it would completely disconnect us from our energy centers. So,
but it's interesting, because I think that separation is all about power and control. Because, it doesn't matter if someone's never done, movement for the mind or dance, or it doesn't matter. But everyone, I believe, when you look at it, they've had that experience. And it's in the body where we experience that oneness, where we experience that bliss, that joy. Mm. You see it in babies.
Yep, definitely. So as you're talking about, that brings us back to integration, like integrating into our wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And then leading into joy. So if you can share with the listeners what you feel is some of the net results that will occur, the ripples for everyone, ones that you've already witnessed for yourself and others that you've worked with, so that they might consider starting to move their body and their mind.
Yes. Well, I think that if you look at, my path has been, spiritually has been yoga, in a deep way, not just the asanas, and the asanas are great. But if you look at any ancient teachings and the yogis, the goal is always joy and happiness. And what is so amazing about, you know, the great teachers, the shamans, the great masters, is they knew that it wasn't going to happen by manipulating the external environment and making, you know, finally reaching $1 billion and having, you know, a certain relationship and having control and power and fame. They knew that that happiness and that joy, that bliss was inside. So in working with what I call movement for the mind, for, I would say, 99.9% of the people who've done the work and who've experienced it, whether it's in one session or in 2 years of sessions or in once a week for 5 years, they find that place. They access that joy within themselves. And it's not because I did it for them it's something that we all can experience within ourselves. And I really think that's what life is about. And the more that we're able to see that the resources for experiencing that is within ourselves, then we can enjoy those things outwardly also that invoke that, whether it's a glass of wine or it's having, you know, a walk on the beach or doing movement for the mind or any other different type of external activity. We understand that those activities help us to reach those internal places, those places of wisdom, those places of joy, those places of knowledge that are all within us in a unique way. So that's what I've seen. And besides the fact that when you are able to let go of the voice of judgment and experience dance as a creative activity inside and outside, it is a blast. I became a dancer at 21, and I remember this because no one becomes a dancer at 21. You become an attorney, you do anything else, but you stop being a dancer at 21. And it was, for me, my impossible dream, and I decided that not only did I want to learn how to be a technically proficient dancer using ballet and modern, but I wanted then to be able to use it as a tool for anyone to access it. And, you know, I started with dance therapy, and then I, you know, over the last 35 years, created and pioneered this thing that I called Movement for the Mind. But I remember that dance to me, and I played with all the arts. I've been I draw and I paint, and I've been an actress, and I'm a writer, and I'm not so great of a musician. I have composed music, but I won't say that I'm good at music. But for me, dance was the poetry, this physical poetry, because the dancer needs nothing other than the instrument of its own vehicle. So I really believe any of us in a physical bodies have that ability to access that.
Beautiful. And if you can share with the listeners that might be inspired to move a little bit more, if you can share some simple ways, first of all, maybe getting your book.
can get my book and my CD. My CD, Movement for the Mind, The Magic of Movement, is available with the book, just a CD right in the book. And it's available in CD form. My book is available in paperback form, and then I also have digital, MP3 of the CDs, and also the book is also an ebook. But if they what's unique about that, rather than just putting on music and, you know, dancing, which is great, this is all guided. So I start with an inventory of just being aware of the breath and how you're doing emotionally, mentally, physically, and then connecting to your witness. And then I work making sure that you don't judge yourself. So I work with what I call the VOJ and the VOI, VOI being the voice of intuition, inspiration, or objective intelligence, and releasing the voice of judgment. So that gives people permission to do this work without judging themselves, which most of us do when it comes to any of the arts. And then I guide everything. So that movement or becomes a familiar vocabulary so that you can then work with any theme. So, I definitely recommend people, you know, they can download it, and it's only $15 for any people who, you know, that's an issue for. You can always email me, and,
you'll pay it forward.
But the book has a lot of philosophy as well as four different exercises that anyone can do. So it allows you to do it at home. It allows you to do it in groups. And I'm hoping to actually train practitioners in this work so that they can go out and work in their level of expertise, whether it's, you know, if you're a teacher or if you're a fitness person, or if you are a psychologist or a counselor, or you just want to work with children, or you are a nurse and want to work with patients. So I'm going to begin to do practitioner training certification programs in this work so that they can learn it for themselves as well as, you know, do it as a career.
Beautiful. And you mentioned earlier before we got on the air, you have a couple educator classes coming up in June, in July, right, in Colorado and California?
I'm going to be doing an intro in Colorado on May 22nd. That will be in Boulder, Colorado. I'll be presenting at the International New Age Trade Show in Denver, June 23rd. And then I am hoping to come to Southern California, both the LA and Northern San Diego area in late June, early July for anyone who might want to sponsor an introductory class. And I charge a nominal fee for 2 hours, and I would love to have a location to do that somewhere in Southern California to introduce people to the work as well. And then hoping to start a training program in July.
Beautiful. And if you can share your website, and we'll include all these links below, but I always like you to share it.
It's www.bodymindynamics with an S, and there are two Ds, bodymindynamics, and it's .org.
Beautiful. And also, if you can share within this coursework that you're going to be presenting to educators, and then also if you have any upcoming classes for people that just want to experience a session with you or a workshop.
They can just, I'm doing, the class I'm doing on May 22nd is for anyone who wants to do the work, either as a practitioner or who just wants to experience it. So that's on May 22nd, again, in Boulder, Colorado, and they can get hold of me and come to that. And the one as well that I would like to set up in Southern California would be the same thing for people to experience it. I work privately with clients, and I do seminars for specific teachers, and the next one, I believe, is in June for Movement for the Mind. For educators, and they can get graduate credits for that, for those courses. So any of you educators out there who need to recertify your teaching license or need credits for salary enhancement, yeah, they're doing away with that. But for those teachers that still can go up the salary scale, I have some wonderful classes, including a class called Movement for the Mind for Educators. Gateway to Integrating Right and Left Brain Learning. So those are all available, and I have the resources and the credits for that. But anyone can just contact me, and I will be glad to travel to their location and do a workshop or seminar. I had a client who used to take yoga from me when I lived in the Bay Area at Stanford University, and she flew me out for 5 days to work with her privately. So glad to do that as well.
Beautiful. Well, Françoise, I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your knowledge from, you know, it's like you've been seeding yourself for this moment. So I'm really excited for you, and I look forward to seeing you share this in many different arenas. That's where it feels like it's going to go. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you so much for, I could just tell that you definitely imbibed a lot of this by reading it, and thank you so much for your astute questions.
You're welcome.
For what you do with your radio and with all the work that you do.
Thank you so much. Once again, I want to thank Françoise for joining us today and for her patience. And what is so beautiful, when we concluded this interview a while back before technology created a lockdown for me on these interviews, was that a couple of the songs that she liked were Hallelujah and Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. These became very poignant for me over the summer, how I had never really listened to them until I was exiting the Galactic Center, Hopi land, and they are special messages for all of us. So we're going to exit out with Hallelujah and Suzanne, and until next time, please connect with Françoise's work, and I humbly bow to all of you with a soft gaze, a full heart, and a namaste.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing Hallelujah. 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 Couldn't feel, so I tried to touch. I've told the truth. didn't come to fool you. And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand before the Lord of song with nothing.
The mirror, and you want. travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know you can trust her, for she's touched